Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a difference in this world. And we're going to explore many different aspects and areas of life, including business, physical, mental, relationships, sales, spirituality, disabilities, and many, many more interesting topics. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter, and I recently spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now, and I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced. And I also stand about 5'2" due to the heavy daily doses of the steroid prednisone that I had to take for the arthritis. I'm a senior research director at the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that is the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. And you can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and Tall, T-A-L-L.com. And my guest today is Lisa Sansom. She is the owner of LVS Consulting, which is an independent consulting firm that helps to build positive organization. Lisa coaches, speaks, and consults from a basis of positive psychology. She works with individuals, leaders, teams, and even entire organizational units, providing services such as individual and leadership coaching, team facilitation, effective communication training, appreciative inquiry, and change management consulting. Her clients include a variety of organizations such as Crown Corporations, private industry, as well as educational institutions. As an ICF-accredited coach, her clients include managers and leaders, as well as aspiring leaders who seek to improve their positive impact in the organizations where they work. Additionally, Lisa has conducted team facilitation from the executive level, assisting with visioning and strategizing to the functional team level, helping to uncover team issues and to develop and implement action plans. Lisa is a business book reviewer for Your Workplace magazine, which is Canada's authority on work-life issues, and she has also authored a highly successful series on The Change Cycle, which became the most requested reprint series in the history of the publication. She's also co-authored a 5-part series on appreciative inquiry and has spoken at the magazine's annual conference. In her volunteer time, Lisa is the 2012 conference chair for the Canadian Positive Psychology Association and is an active board member. She's also the VP of the MAPP Alumni Association. Welcome to the show today, Lisa.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
As you know, I found out about you about the Positive Psychology conference coming up. And when a friend of mine mentioned that to me, boy, that was exciting because that's kind of what I base my life around. And so you're the chair of that. And so maybe start off by telling us a little bit about that conference, when it is, and some of the topics, kind of cool and amazing topics that you'll be discussing and talking about there.
Yeah, thank you. The Canadian Positive Psychology Association is a brand new not-for-profit organization in Canada. We started in the past year. I mean, we're just so brand new. And I studied under Martin Seligman, as did the president of our board, Louisa. And when we approached Martin Seligman and said we wanted to start a positive psychology association in Canada, what did he recommend? His words of wisdom were that we should have a conference. And the conference is great for getting word out there, but it has also connected us with fabulous people, researchers and practitioners, not just in Canada, but around the world. We have speakers coming from the States and the UK as well, and we have attendees coming from even further than that, to hear about the latest and greatest in positive psychology research. So I invite anybody who's listening, our early bird rates have just been extended until July 3rd because we had so many people say, wait, I wanted to come, I just couldn't plan that far ahead. So our website is positivepsychologycanada.com, and there's no dots or dashes or spaces or capital letters or anything fancy in there. It's just positivepsychologycanada.com. The conference is being held in Toronto, which is in southern Ontario, on the University of Toronto campus, and it's beautiful. It's an absolutely stunning place for us to have the conference. I couldn't be happier. And it's July 20th and 21st. We have two very full days of keynotes, speakers, workshops, talks, symposia, interaction, because we really want to get people meeting up with each other, and, of course, good food and great company. So everybody's invited to come to that.
Wow. And when I was thinking of the conference, I was thinking, you know, when you have the word psychology in it, people think it's more for medical people. But I would think that entrepreneurs and salespeople and business owners and managers all need to know about positive psychology. We may know it in Napoleon Hill circles as positive mental attitude. But that positive mental attitude that Napoleon Hill wrote about so many years ago now has a lot of science behind it. And when you can learn the science behind what you knew intuitively, you can really use that knowledge to direct it in whatever part of life you're involved in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We do have some speakers who are very research heavy. I remember the first positive psychology conference that I went to was with the International Positive Psychology Association, and that was back in, I think that was back in 2009 that I went, and I had never been to an academic conference before, and I remember coming out of there with my eyes just wide open at the statistics and the research and the posters and the graphs and the margin of errors and the, you know, everything that I had been learning. Like, it was all there because I'm not an academic researcher myself, had done statistics courses, but had never really been to an academic something. I am very much a practitioner. My interest is very much in the business world. As you mentioned in the bio, I do a lot of work with leaders, with teams, with corporations, and help them apply positive psychology. I had never seen the research before. So we do have some speakers who are PhDs, they're working at universities, they are going to be moving the field of positive psychology research ahead. And so they are talking about things like the role of humor. They're talking about things like organizational culture. They're talking about how couples can be using positive psychology. So it spans a huge range of topics. And then we also have a number of practitioners, and they will be conducting workshops on things like high-performance teams, on things like applied positive psychology programs that they have created to help individuals have more well-being and better lives. We even have a speaker who's going to come and talk about well-being and happiness for lawyers. And you would think if there's any profession that would be at completely the opposite end of positive psychology, it would be lawyers. But this wonderful man, his name is Dan Bowling, he also did the Master of Applied Positive Psychology program. And his life's calling is really bringing positive psychology into the legal profession. So we have a wide variety of people talking about meditation, talking about the experience with nature. And we have some who get very, very specific. So taking a look at mothers with multiple sclerosis and parental satisfaction and using positive psychology tools in there. So, I mean, it's just a fabulously diverse conference. There is absolutely something for everybody here. And our whole speaker list and what people will be talking about, presenting on, doing the workshops on is up on our website as well.
Wow, and that one about a mother with MS, you can just insert insert doesn't have to be MS. It can be any handicap, and how to, because I had rheumatoid arthritis since I'm 5. But imagine if your parent is disabled. There's some psychology involved in that, and being a mother to start with, but also being a handicapped mother. So that is an amazing topic. And the lawyer one, my wife's been a paralegal for a criminal in the criminal law in Mississauga here for like 20 years. And as you said, wow, positive psychology for lawyers, it's almost like an oxymoron.
We have a
researcher as you said,
from
it's
BC.
We
have a researcher from BC who's coming to talk about the strengths in the homeless. I mean, positive psychology just encompasses so many different areas.
Wow. And yet, I think a lot of people would think about positive psychology as just being about happiness, because you've seen a number of books on happiness in the last number of years, and yet it's way, way, way more than just about happiness, isn't it?
It really is. As you mentioned in the outset, I studied with Martin Seligman, who some call him the father of positive psychology. And you mentioned, you know, with your work, Napoleon Hill and many others, going back to even Aristotle, the notion of happiness, well-being, what works well with humans, it's been around for a long time. But Martin Seligman, about 15 years ago, really formalized it into a research discipline. And that's the piece that had been missing, is that there had been very little empirical psychological science done around what we're now calling well-being or flourishing. What the media tends to pick up on is the yellow smiley face, right? Any article that you see online about happiness and positive psychology tends to have that yellow smiley face with it. And you're absolutely right. Positive psychology is about so much more than happiness. Happiness captures the popular attention. We're also looking at things like elements of meaning. And when you think about somebody like Mother Teresa, who had loads of meaning in her life. Everything that she did was motivated by her faith, her belief, and her sense of meaning. But she wasn't a particularly happy woman. And yet, huge changes, you know, very profound impact on millions and millions of people. So that's an element of positive psychology as well. We know, for example, that when you're in a close relationship with somebody, you have to work at it. And there can be ups and downs, and sometimes you're not very happy in that relationship. You know, you've just had a big fight, but that person means a lot to you. You want to go back to them and you want to fix that relationship. That there are elements of positive psychology in there as well. And doctors John and Julie Gottman, who are very well known in positive psychology circles, do a lot of research around what do good relationships look like. And you're not happy all the time in very good relationships, but that is part of it, absolutely. But that's not all there is. And in fact, if you only go and pursue happiness, it just doesn't make sense for a full and complete life. So positive psychology says there is so much more. The other misconception that people often have about positive psychology is they think positive psychology says you should ignore all the bad stuff and only focus on the good stuff. And that is not true either, because positive psychology acknowledges that horrible things sometimes happen in life. And what positive psychology can do is provide you with tools and skills and psychological resilience to be able to weather those ups and downs much better than if maybe you didn't have access to these tools or skills. Because, you know, stuff happens to everybody. And so positive psychology is helpful in the ups and the downs.
Exactly. And then you had mentioned, you'll say the name again, but I read the book by that couple who do the marriage counseling, positive psychology in marriage. They were, I believe, on Oprah. I believe they can, from watching, I believe they can watch like a 10-minute video of people, a couple's arguing, and then predict with 95% you know, success rate, whether they'll be married still in 5 years or not. And so with that kind of, you know, statistics behind them of that being accurate, they really have narrowed down. And I believe in their book, there's like 5 or 6 things that you can really notice in what they look at. And a lot of it, as you just mentioned, involves around positive psychology. And they're talking about that same thing, that you're not always in love or always happy in a relationship. But what long-lasting couples and relationships have figured out is how to still make that work, right?
Yeah, so the researchers are John and Julie Gottman. And they have written fabulous, fabulous books, including how couples welcome children into their families, because that can change the dynamics as well. What I really love about their work is that they have identified what they call the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse, that if they see these in those videos that you're referring to, they tend to predict a failure of the relationship, unless they also see repairing behavior afterwards. But what I love about positive psychology and their work is that these are skills. So John and Julie Gottman can teach you, for example, how to fight fair, because sometimes you do fight in a relationship, but there are ways to do it effectively, and there are ways that will destroy your relationship. They're skills. You can learn them. Even if you don't naturally come by them or you don't think of it on your own, you can be taught these and you can learn these skills. It's the same sort of thing with Martin Seligman's notion of optimistic explanatory style. Some people just explain the world naturally in very pessimistic terms. That's, for whatever reason, that's how your brain is hardwired. That's what you learned as a child. For whatever reason, as an adult, you just naturally tend to be pessimistic. Well, there are optimistic explanatory skills that you can learn, and you can become more optimistic in suitable situations, because it doesn't make sense to be optimistic all of the time, and you will get the same psychological and physical health benefits by learning those skills as someone who's naturally inclined that way. So a lot of what I do is teach people these skills. When I'm coaching with them, I'm coaching them through how to practice this. And with our Canadian Positive Psychology Conference, we want people to get more exposed to these skills that are research-based so that they can benefit personally and professionally from the positive psychology applications.
Wow, and I love what you said. These are skills. One of the greatest courses I ever took was Zig Ziglar's Born to Win class in Dallas, Texas, and he had people list attributes of successful people, and almost every single attribute, like 90-odd percent of the attributes people mentioned, were skills, things that you could learn that other people are doing well and that you could learn. And so it's not beyond your reach if you don't have it now. And the other thing you mentioned, and just my wife would acknowledge it, she's along the pessimism scale, and he generally thinks on that side. And as you can tell from myself, I'm on the extreme, probably high end of the positive scale. And so this causes some challenges. And as you said, this is a skill that you can learn. Even if you're predisposed to pessimism, you can still learn some skills to apply, as you said, in the appropriate circumstances as well. It doesn't apply every circumstance, but everything that is in positive psychology that's researched and studied, I don't like to say everything and anything, but let's say most things that are studied in positive psychology are skills that you can learn from other people to improve your overall life.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that they are skills that are learnable is just so important to me. It's, you know, when you start anything, right, you look at marathon runners and you think, oh, they were just born to do that. Then you talk to them about the training and the exercise and the mindset and the diet and the regime and the discipline. You realize, you know, pretty much anybody can train and go run a marathon. It just takes that discipline and that time and that dedication. And it's the same thing with a lot of the positive psychology skills. Now, I also love that you're mentioning people like Zig Ziglar and very motivational speakers. I mean, you think about somebody like Tony Robbins, and while not everybody's going to be 6'6" or however tall he is, But people can learn a lot of the skills that he talks about that are very encouraging and motivational. Where positive psychology differs, I would say, from these motivational speakers is positive psychology looks at the science, and a very new science. So in some cases, positive psychology is validating what people have been saying for thousands of years. So you go back to, you know, the virtues of Benjamin Franklin, for example, character strengths. Positive psychology is starting to validate some of those things. And then positive psychology also says, when does it work and when doesn't it? So positive affirmations, for example, have been a keystone of motivational speakers over the years. Well, it turns out that if you have low self-esteem, positive affirmations can actually be very damaging, and they don't work very well for you. They work if you have a very healthy, positive self-esteem. And what works better for people with low self-esteem is remembering good things that have happened to them in the past. So getting at that nuance, we can't blanket say everybody, isn't that cool?
I'm just learning this myself because I teach affirmations to lots of people. So tell me about this again. So if you are predisposed to a negative self-image,
should remember positive activities.
Okay.
And that works better for you in terms of self-motivation than positive affirmations. Positive affirmations, the science says right now, works well for people who already have a healthy, positive self-esteem.
Wow. And see what the science can uncover is like, okay, people would say in general that affirmations are a great thing, but science can identify where they are a great thing and where they're not going to actually benefit you at all. And so very cool, and something now I have to readapt into what I teach people because I teach them affirmations, but kind of a hard question to start with. Do you have a good self-esteem or a bad one? But if there's a way to figure that out, then you can ask them to remember, you know, pleasant or good experiences from the past instead. And so that would be a key thing where if you're coaching someone and you're using that wrong skill, teaching them the wrong skill, you're not going to see the results and you're not going to know why, because you assume affirmations work for everybody. But they don't work
exactly
for everybody.
Positive psychology works so well in the coaching world, but you have to stay on top of the research. So, for example, Sonia Lyubomirsky has a fabulous book called The How of Happiness, and it has 12 validated positive activities in it. We call them positive interventions, things that people can do to increase their well-being. And now people are looking at those 12 validated activities and looking at the nuances and saying, who does it work for and when does it not work? So as a positive psychology coach, I have to stay on top of all of that research. One of the interventions in Lyubomirsky's book, and it's kind of held up as a gold standard of positive psychology interventions, is the gratitude journal. And you may have heard about this, that every night before you go to sleep, you're supposed to write down three things that you're grateful for. And there's also the gratitude letter, which is held up as another gold standard, that you write a letter to somebody expressing your gratitude to them, you know, like a teacher, a parent, a mentor, somebody who's been formative in your life. And you go and do a gratitude visit where you read this letter to them. Well, it turns out that, generally speaking, men and women express and feel very differently about gratitude. Gratitude letters and journals tend to work very well for women, generally speaking. But when men express gratitude, there tends to be a feeling of indebtedness, that now that I'm grateful for you for something, I now owe you something. And there's this kind of quid pro quo feeling. And so as a positive psychology coach, I want to be mindful of the science. I want to be mindful of the fact that these are also generalizations, because a gratitude visit could work very well for some men and not for some women. But maybe if I've got a male client or a female client in front of me, I'm now going to start from a different place, because my going in assumption is that they might experience gratitude differently. Part of coaching, of course, is also follow up afterwards. So after a client tries, let's say, a gratitude journal for a week, the question is always, how did that go? And if they say, it worked really well, I feel so much better, I'm sleeping better, I'm looking for things that I'm grateful for, I have a more positive outlook on life, I say, great, do you want to keep doing it? And they'll keep doing it. If they come in and say, you know, that gratitude journal, I tried it for 3 days, it was hokey, I lost the book, I didn't bother looking for it, I say, great, we've learned something. The gratitude journal is not for you. Let's come up with something else. And then we can dive into other scientifically validated interventions that might work better for that person.
Wow, wow. And then we talked about, even before this show, about I read a book recently, Positivity by Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, which just, wow, excited me so much. I have so much underlined in that book. I'm a numbers person. Maybe males are more interested in statistics and numbers. Could be a generalization as well. But I loved it in that it reinforced a lot of things I already knew. It came up with this 3-to-1 formula, 3 positive inputs for every negative one, and just a ton of research. And you were telling me about even other research that Dr. Fredrickson is doing. So tell me a little bit about some of the other areas that are being studied by her and others that pertain to positive psychology as well.
Oh, there are so many. This is why people need to come to conferences like our conference that's coming up in July. Barbara Fredrickson is a fabulous researcher. She is absolutely stellar. I love the book Positivity. It is one of my favorite books. I love the 3-to-1 positivity ratio. So just to give a little bit of background on that for anyone who's not familiar with it, it was actually a mathematical model that was developed by the mathematician Marcel Losada. So it's sometimes also called the Losada ratio. And then it was empirically tested with business teams. So one of the reasons that I love this is because it's actually been tested in the corporate environment. And as you probably know, a lot of psychology research is done with university or college undergraduates who are signing up for these experiments because they get course credits for it. So when we see experiments that are done, you know, quote, in the real world, that to me adds a lot of validity to it, because if it can work in corporate America, then it can probably be a lot more easily transferred to other areas. So what they did is they went in and took a look at high-performing teams, and they measured in terms of utterances, the things that people actually said, whether they were positive or negative, were they questions or were they statements, were they self-directed or other-directed. And they found that high-forming teams asked more questions, more open and genuine and curious questions. The comments on high-performing teams were more other-focused and less self-focused. And the piece that really caught everybody's imagination is that there was about a 3-to-1 positive to negative ratio, where teams were saying 3 times more positives than they were negatives. And this is what had been predicted by Marcel Losada in his Losada ratio theory. So, fabulous. This is a skill. Teams can learn this. Teams, individuals on teams can learn to ask questions. They can learn to be other focused, and they can learn to say more positive things. Now, people often look at this positivity ratio and they say, there is no way that I can reduce the number of negative things that I say, because I have to draw attention to mistakes. I have to tell people when they're wrong. And as a coach and consultant, I say, of course you do. But there are two ways to change a ratio. You know, you can get rid of some of the negatives, or you can increase the positives. And so I encourage people to look for things that are going right, catch people doing things right more often, tell them when things are going right more often. And there's a whole way that you do that as well. The other researcher who I currently love is Carol Dweck. And Carol Dweck does research around what's called fixed and growth mindset. And a fixed mindset is people who think, for example, that you're just born that way. Now, you're good at math, you're just born that way. You're good at languages, mm-hmm. you're just born that way. But the growth mindset is, oh, you're good at math, you must have tried really hard. I can get good at math, too, if I try really hard or if I put effort into it, or that sort of notion of 10,000 hours to become an expert that people like Malcolm Gladwell have talked about. So when you're praising somebody for what they have done well, you want to do it in such a way that encourages a growth mindset so that people will be more open to trying new things, taking risks, trying harder, and so there's a whole scientific body around that as well. But the 3-to-1 ratio is a big thing that I use with a lot of my teams. Now, Barbara Fredrickson also looks at what I might call the psychobiology of love and oxytocin and what love looks like, coming up with a definition of love and how that factors into positive psychology. One of the stories about Barbara Fredrickson goes that she was in a very early positive psychology retreat with Martin Seligman and a number of the other big names who founded this field of positive psychology research. And they were coming up with a whole bunch of topics of what positive psychology is. And so they came up with optimism, they came up with resilience, they came up with hope, they came up with character strengths. And Barbara Fredrickson, the story goes, was the only woman at this retreat. And she piped up and said, well, what about love? And that is how love got the research focus that it absolutely deserves. And it is one of the character strengths that Martin Seligman and Chris Peterson put together, is the capacity to love and be loved. And it's such an important character strength for people to work on and to have.
Oh, big time. And it could be one of the keys of success of life, the ability to love and to be loved.
And Chris Peterson... Chris Peterson would agree with you. He is a huge name in the field of positive psychology. He wrote a primer of positive psychology. And when asked to define what positive psychology is, his quote is, other people matter. And that is human beings. As human beings, we have to enter into relationship with other people, which I'm going to put in another plug for the conference, is why we've chosen to do a real conference that brings real people together in a real physical environment for 2 days. Because other people matter, and we want people to enter into those relationships with people from the same city as them, people who have similar research and application interests, because other people matter, and because we are such social beings, we need to be with other people.
Exactly. Napoleon Hill, one of his number two success principles called the mastermind principle, where you get people like at this conference, like-minded people working in harmony, trying to improve the science and improve the world and make a difference in their community. And boy, that's going to be a heck of a conference. So that people don't have to listen till the end, give me the date and give me the website again.
Sure. The date is July 20th and 21st in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We do have people coming in from all over the world for this. The website is www.positivepsychologycanada.com, and there's no dashes or extra dots or anything in there. And if you go on to that website, you will see a tab that takes you straight to our conference 2012. You can register online. We have the full program online with all of our speakers. We have about 50 speakers, keynotes, people offering workshops, and we have a link to help you find hotels, how to get there. And we've even partnered with some organizations to get continuing education credits as well. So coaches, for example, this will count as their part of professional development.
Wow,
so that's all
fantastic.
On PsychologyCanada.com.
And for sure, people should head out to that. Now, Lisa, how did you get involved in this field or discipline? Because, A, it's relatively new. Not a lot of kids, when I was growing up, said, oh, I want to be a positive psychology practitioner. how did you become interested in this? And like, boy, you've been meeting or talking with Dr. Seligman, as you'd mentioned earlier. He's like probably the father of the industry. So how did you get involved in all this? Because it is a fascinating field, but it is relatively new and not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, it's, everybody has their story, right? I was reading an article recently about how people these days have career plans, and actually that might work against you. What's needed now in the workplace is more career flexibility and being open to opportunities. And I like to think that I've been fairly open to opportunities. So I actually started out my professional career as a high school French teacher, if you can believe that. And, it's a very odd place considering where I've ended up. But as a high school French teacher, I had a really interesting experience one day where a couple of my grade 9 boys, and grade 9 French is mandatory in Ontario, so I was the last thing standing between them and never having to take French ever again. And a couple of my grade 9 French boys just were making my life miserable. It was a hot day at the end of May, and it was the last class of the day, and they had just been miserable. And I put my head down at the end of class, and I just cried. I was just beat by these 14-year-olds. And when I thought about it, I really started to get angry at these four boys who had made my class so miserable. And so I stormed all the way back to the staff room where the phone was, and I picked up the phone and I called the parents of my 25 other students who had made that class a good class. And the conversations were really funny, Tom, I have to tell you. They went something like this. I picked up the phone and say, "Hello, Mr. Smith," and he would say yes, and say, "I just want to let you know Jane was excellent in class today. She came with her homework done, she answered questions, and I'm really happy to have Jane as a French student." And there was this big pause, and the dad or the mom or whoever would say, "Are you sure?"
Yes. My son, my daughter.
I'm just so happy to have your child in my class. And they'd say, "Okay, is there anything else?" And I'd say, "No, that's it. Thanks very much. Have a good evening." And so after 25 calls like that, I felt a lot better. I mean, it took me a couple of hours, but I did feel a lot better. And I went home and I had a really good evening after being so miserable. When I came back to school the next day and I walked down the long hallway to my last period French class, those four boys were standing in the hallway with their arms crossed in a very defiant stance, waiting for me outside the classroom. And I said, hello to them. And they said, "How come you didn't call our parents?" And I looked at them and I said, "Well, when you give me a reason to call your parents, I will call them." And they were so good in class that day that I got on the phone that evening and called their parents and praised their children, said how happy I was. And that was my first introduction to maybe there is something to this focusing on the positive, because I had never learned that in university. I had never learned that in teachers' college. And I would love to see every teacher in the world get exposed to positive psychology. And we do have speakers coming to talk about positive psychology as well. Well, the years went by, and I ended up going back to school to get my MBA, and I transitioned into a career in the business world and worked.
Hello? Hello, Lisa. Hello. Hello. Lisa? Hello.